This is the first of a series of Latin listening post interviews with persons more or less directly concerned with the conflict between the United States and Cuba. In subsequent programs, we will present talks with people who are connected with the Cuban refugee organizations, people who were connected with President Batista, and U.S. citizens with direct stakes in the outcome of the Cuban situation. Tonight, we have with us a representative of probably the most controversial organization connected with Cuba in this country. The organization, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. The person, Lee Oswald, secretary of the New Orleans chapter to the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. This organization has long been on the Justice Department's blacklist and is a group which is generally considered to be the leading pro-Castro body in the nation. As a reporter of Latin American affairs in this city for several years now, your columnist has kept a lookout for local representatives of this pro-Castro group. None appeared in public view until this week, when young Lee Oswald was arrested and convicted for disturbing the peace. He was arrested while passing out pro-Castro literature to a crowd which included several violently anti-Castro Cuban refugees. When we finally tracked Mr. Oswald down today and asked him to participate in Latin Listening Post, he told us frankly that he would because it may help his organization attract more members in this area. With that in mind, and knowing that Mr. Oswald must have had to demonstrate a great skill in dialectics before he was entrusted with his present post, we now proceed on the course of random questioning of Mr. Oswald. Mr. Oswald, how long has the Fair Play for Cuba Committee had an organization in New Orleans?
We have had members in this area for several months now. Up until about 2 months ago, however, we have not organized our members into any sort of an active group. Until, as you say, this week, we have decided to feel out the public what they think of our organization, our aims. And for that purpose, we have been, as you say, distributing literature on the street for the purpose of trying to attract new members and feel out the public.
Do you have any other activities other than distributing literature at the present time?
Well, I assume you mean, do I have any organizational duties myself?
Yes.
Yes, as secretary, I'm responsible for the keeping of records and the protection of the members' names so that undue publicity or attention will not be drawn to them if they do not desire it. My duties are as the duties of a secretary of any organization. Now, our organization has a president, a secretary, and a treasurer. The duties of those people would be more or less self-evident. Those then are my duties. I do not, however, belong to any other organization at all.
Are you at liberty to reveal the membership of your organization?
No, I'm not.
For what reason?
Well, as secretary, I believe it's standard operating procedure that an organization consisting of a political minority protect the names and addresses of its members, and I have that is my duty, and I have every reason to do that.
Mr. Oswald, there are many commentators in the journalistic field in this country that equate the Fair Play for Cuba Committee with the American Communist Party. What's your feeling about this, and are you a member of the American Communist Party?
Well, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, with its headquarters at 799 Broadway in New York, has been investigated by the Senate subcommittees who are occupied with this sort of thing. They have investigated our organization from the viewpoint of taxes, subversion, allegiance, and in general where and how and why we exist. They have found absolutely nothing to connect us with the Communist Party of the United States. In regards to your question about whether I myself am a communist, as I said, I do not belong to any other organization.
I noticed from your pamphlets that one bears the title of Hands Off Cuba. I'm curious as to whether or not this applies to the Soviet Union as well as to the United States.
This organization is not occupied at all with the problem of the Soviet Union or the problem of international communism. Hands Off Cuba is the main slogan of this committee. It means, it follows our first principle, which has to do with non-intervention. In other words, keeping your hands off a foreign state, which is supported by the Constitution and so forth and so on. We have our own non-intervention laws. That is what Hands Off Cuba means. As I say, we are not occupied at all with the problem of the Soviet Union.
Does your group believe that the Castro regime in Cuba is not actually a front for a Soviet colony in the Western Hemisphere?
Very definitely. Castro is an independent leader of an independent country. He has ties with the Soviet Union, with the Eastern Bloc. However, I think it's rather obvious as to why and when and where, because of the fact that we certainly don't have any trade with them. We are discouraging trade with that country, with our allies and so forth. So, of course, he has to turn to Russia. That does not mean, however, that he is dependent upon Russia. He receives trade from many countries, including Great Britain to a certain extent, France, certain other powers in the Western Hemisphere. He is even trading with several of the more independent African states. So that you cannot point at Castro and say that he is a Russian puppet. He is not. He is an independent person, an independent leader of his country. And I believe that was pointed out very well during the October crisis, when Castro very definitely said that although Premier Khrushchev had urged him to have on-site inspection at his rocket bases in Cuba, that Fidel Castro refused.
Do you feel that the Fair Play for Cuba Committee would maintain its present line as far as supporting President or Premier Castro if the Soviet Union broke relations with the Castro regime in Cuba?
We do not support the man. We do not support the individual. We support the idea of an independent revolution in the Western Hemisphere, free from American intervention. We do not support, as I say, the individual. If the Cuban people destroy Castro, or if he is otherwise proven to have betrayed his own revolution, that will not have any bearing upon this committee. We are a committee who do believe that Castro has not so far betrayed his own country.
Do you believe that the Castro regime is a communist regime?
They have they have said that they are a Marxist country. On the other hand, so is Ghana, so is several other countries in Africa. Every country which emerges from a sort of a feudal state, as Cuba did, experiments usually in socialism, in Marxism. For that matter, Great Britain has socialized medicine. You cannot say that Castro is a communist at this time because he has not developed his country, his system, so far. He has not had the chance to become a communist. He is an experimenter, a person who is trying to find the best way for his country. If he chooses a socialist or a Marxist or a communist way of life, that is something upon which only the Cuban people can pass. We do not have the right to pass on that. We can have our own opinions, naturally, but we cannot exploit that system and say it is a bad one, it is a threat to our existence, and then go in and try to destroy it. That would be against our principles of democracy.
As a representative of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, do you feel that capitalism in any form, or at least capitalism as we know it, has any place in the future of Cuba?
Well, so far, the situation has developed where that it is irrevocably lost as far as Cuba is irrevocably lost as far as capitalism goes. There will never be a capitalist regime again in Cuba. Cuba may go the way of Czechoslovakia, Yugoslavia, or it may go the way to the other extreme, the way of China. In other words, a dogmatic communist system. That depends on how we handle the matter here in the United States.
Does the Fair Play for Cuba Committee have any particular position in the Cuban, or rather the Chinese and Russian conflict? Has it taken sides as opposed to China's position in this conflict or as opposed to Russia's position?
Well, no, we do not pass on international situations of that sort. As the name implies, Fair Play for Cuba Committee, we are occupied only with the one narrow point of Cuba, the problem of Cuba and what it is to us. We are not occupied or at all with the problems of the Sino-Russian or the Yugoslavian-Russian problems whatsoever.
I have here with me tonight various pieces of literature that Mr. Oswald has been distributing on street corners here in the last week. I'd like to read to you some of the titles. The first is a yellow handbill entitled Hands Off Cuba. Join the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, New Orleans Charter Member Branch. There's another pamphlet by the name of, quote, The Revolution Must Be a School of Unfettered Thought, - Fidel Castro. There's still another pamphlet entitled Fidel Castro Denounces Bureaucracy and Sectarianism, and a fourth pamphlet entitled Ideology and Revolution by Jean-Paul Sartre. I'm curious about a fifth pamphlet, however, Mr. Oswald. This to me was the most interesting. It's entitled The Crime Against Cuba by Carlos Lamont. The theme of this pamphlet is the fact that the U.S. was committed a grave injustice when it backed the Bay of Pigs invasion in 1961. Now, it has probably a complete ideology here for the National Liberation Movement type of philosophy that we hear a lot of in the new countries. Picking among the paragraphs, I see one here that I'd like to hear Mr. Oswald's comment on, and I'd like to quote. It is well to recall that the national emergency proclaimed by President Truman in 1950 during the Korean War is still in effect in the United States and has been utilized constantly for the curtailment of civil liberties. What's your comment about the veracity of this statement?
Well, of course, that is the last paragraph of a very long page. That has to do with the fact that propaganda in the United States has slanted and shown Cuba and Castro to be in a very bad light. Now, they have mentioned, the U.S. government has mentioned, that Castro has declared an emergency in Cuba. He has not held elections, for instance, because of the fact that there is an emergency situation in Cuba. Now, the Castro government, in declaring that, is doing just what this book points out. It is doing what we did in 1950. And you recall what happened in 1950. That was during the beginning of the Korean War, when we felt that we were going to be in a very, very dangerous situation. We adopted an emergency law which restricted newspapers, broadcasters, radio and TV from giving any opinions, any comments which were not already checked out by certain administrative bureaus of the United States government. That was under our emergency. At this time, Fidel Castro has his emergency. It is because of us and our attitude, and because of the attitude of certain other people, certain other countries in Latin America and certain other countries. This then is the parallel which this paragraph is talking about. An emergency in our country at that time, and an emergency in their country at this time.
Mr. Oswald, this is very interesting to me to find out about the restrictions on newspapers in 1950, because I was in the newspaper business at that time. Mm-hmm. I don't recall seeing any such government bureau established in my office to tell us what to print. Exactly what do you have reference to?
Well, I have reference to the obvious fact that during wartime, haphazard guesses and information are not given out by anyone. In regards to military or strategical comments, such as comments or leaks about new fronts or movements and so forth. News was controlled at that time to that extent, as it is always controlled during a war or a national emergency, always.
Do you feel that news is controlled in the United States today regarding Cuba?
It is a self-control, yes, imposed by most newspapers. I don't know whether I'm being fair, but of course I would have to point to the Times-Picayune States Island Syndicate, since it is the only paper we have in New Orleans, and a very restrictive paper it is. The Fair Play for Cuba Committee has often approached this paper with information or comments, and this paper has consistently refused because of the fact that it is sympathetic to the anti-Castro regime. It is systematically refused to print anything objective, anything giving the other man's viewpoint about Cuba
Would you care to list the dates of the persons that you talked to in the papers that refused to print this material?
I do not know the name of the reporter. I did speak to the city editor. I spoke to him 1 week ago, and I spoke to him yesterday, Friday, which was immediately after our demonstration when I and several other of my members had a demonstration in front of the International Trademark, which was filmed by WDSU-TV and shown last night on the news. At that time, at 2 o'clock, I went to the Times-Picayune, informed them of our demonstration, which was very well covered by WDSU-TV, and they told me at that time that due to the fact that they were not sympathetic to this organization or to the aims and ideals of this organization, they would not print any information that I gave them. They did say that if I would care to write a letter to the editor, they might put that in the letter to the editor column.
Mr. Oswald, does it make any difference to you if any of the activities of the local branch of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee benefit the Communist Party or the goals of international communism?
Does it make any... Yes. Well, that is what I believe you would term a loaded question. However, I will attempt to answer it. It is inconsistent with my ideals to support communism, my personal ideals. It is inconsistent with the ideals of the Fair Play for Cuba committee, to support the ideals of international communism. We are not occupied with that problem. We are occupied with the problem of Cuba. We do not believe, under any circumstances, that in supporting our ideals about Cuba, our pro-Castro, as you call them, ideals, we do not believe that that is inconsistent with believing in democracy. Quite the contrary. We believe that it is a necessity in supporting democracy to support Fidel Castro and his right to make his country any way he wants to. Not so much the right to destroy us. Of course, we have our rights about defense. In other words, we do not feel that we are supporting international communism or communism in supporting Fidel Castro.
What other political leaders in Latin America today do you feel fulfill the Fair Play for Cuba Committee's requirements for a democratic political leader?
Well, you know, there's a funny story about Latin America. It goes something like this: coffee, bananas, sugar, and a few other products. In other words, that refers to the so-called banana countries, countries which like Cuba up to this time, had a one-crop agriculture, a one-crop economy. And where did those crops go? They went to the United States. Now, the attitude of those countries who are controlled by the United States, whose economy depends almost 100% upon how much money the United States pours into them, those countries cannot be expected to give an independent viewpoint on Cuba or Castro. The few countries which abstained at certain international inter-American meetings during the last year are those countries which are big enough to support themselves, those countries being only Brazil, Argentina, and perhaps in some cases the Democratic Republic of Costa Rica, which is, by the way, the only democratic republic in all of Central America.
What is your definition of democracy?
The definition of democracy. That's a very good one. That's a very controversial viewpoint. You know, it used to be very clear, but now it's not. You know, when our forefathers drew up the Constitution, they considered that democracy was creating an atmosphere of freedom, of discussion, of argument, of finding the truth. The rights of, well, the classic right of having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In Latin America, they have none of those rights, none of them at all. And that is my definition of democracy, the right to be in a minority and not to be suppressed, the right to see for yourself, without government restrictions, such countries as Cuba, and we are, by the way, restricted from going to Cuba.
Mr. Oswald, when was the last time you were in Latin America?
I've been only to Mexico in my life, sir. I'm not fully acquainted with Latin America personally, but then I'm not the president of this organization either. I'm merely a volunteer, a secretary of this local chapter. I do not claim to be an expert on Latin America, but then very few people do. Certainly, it is obvious to me, having been educated here in New Orleans, and having been instilled with the ideas of democracy and objectiveness, that Cuba and the right of the Cubans to self-determination is more or less self-evident. And one does not have to travel through Central and South America. One does not have to see the poverty in Chile or Peru or the suppression of democratic liberties by the Samoa brothers in Nicaragua in order to draw one's conclusion about Cuba.
Does the Fair Play for Cuba Committee have any opinion about the suppression of democratic liberties in Hungary in 1956 or the poverty in any of the Eastern Bloc countries today?
Officially, no, but of course we have our own opinions about such situation. We consider that Russian imperialism is a very bad thing. It was a bad thing in Hungary. We certainly do not support dictatorship or the suppression of any peoples anywhere. But as I say, and as I must stress, we are preoccupied only with the problem of Cuba, officially.
We'll return for more questions after this message. Mr. Oswald, you have the title of Secretary of the New Orleans Chapter of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. However, you've just said that you've never been to Latin America except for a few ventures into Mexico. In that case, just exactly how do you get your information concerning Latin American affairs or Latin American conditions?
Well, as I say, we are preoccupied with the problem of Cuba. There are correspondents, people who correspond with the headquarters in New York from Cuba, directly from Cuba. That is where they get their information about Cuba. Now, in regards to Latin and Central America, you do not have to be a... you do not have to have your own correspondent there. The AP and the UP cover it very well, and they certainly give a very clear picture of the situation in certain countries, Nicaragua and so forth, as I mentioned, which have very undemocratic regimes, dictatorships. And as I say, these things are well known by everyone, and they accepted it as truth. For instance, you will not be able to find any official or any person who knows about Latin America who will say that Nicaragua does not have a dictatorship.
Very interesting that you should mention dictatorships in Nicaragua, because we naturally, from reading the press, have heard about these dictatorships for many, many years. But it's curious to me as to why no Nicaraguans fled to the United States last year, whereas we had possibly 50 to 60,000 Cubans fleeing from Cuba to the United States.
Yes.
What is the Fair Play for Cuba Committee's official reply to this?
Well, a good question. Nicaraguan situation is one considerably different from Castro's Cuba. People are not inclined to flee their countries unless some new system, some new factor enters into their lives. I must say that very surely into the Nicaragua, no new factors have entered for about 300 years. In fact, the people live exactly how as they have always lived in Nicaragua. I'm referring to the overwhelming majority of people in Nicaragua, which is a feudal dictatorship with 90% of the people engaged in agriculture. These peasants are uneducated. They have one of the lowest living standards in all of the Western Hemisphere. And so because of the fact that no new factor has entered into their lives, because of the fact that no liberating factor has entered into their lives, they remain in Nicaragua. Now, the people who have fled Cuba, that is an interesting situation. Needless to say, there are classes of criminals. There are classes of people who are wanted in Cuba for crimes against humanity. And most of those people are the same people who in New Orleans have set themselves up in stores with blood money and who engage in day-to-day trade with New Orleanians. Those are the people who would certainly not want to go back to Cuba and who would certainly want to flee Cuba. There are other classes. There are peasants who do not like the collectivization in Cuban agriculture. There are others who, for one reason or another, more or less legitimate reasons, reasons of opinion, have fled Cuba. Most of these people flee by legal means. They are allowed to leave after requesting the Cuban government for exit visas. Some of these people, for some reasons or another, do not like to apply for these visas, or they feel that they cannot get them. They flee. They flee Cuba in boats. They flee any way they can go. And I think that the opinion and the attitude of the Cuban government to this is good riddance.
Mr. Oswald, that's very interesting, because as a reporter in this field for some time, I've been interviewing refugees for now about 3 years. And I'd say that the last Batista man officially that I talked to left Cuba about 2.5 years ago. The rest of them that I've talked to have been taxi cab drivers, day laborers, cane cutters, and that sort of thing. I thought this revolution was supposed to benefit these people. What is the Fair Play for Cuba's position on this?
Well, as I say, there are different classes. A minority of class of these people are, as I say, people who were Batista criminals and so forth. It may not be true that the people fleeing nowadays are completely cleansed of Batista elements. Certainly some of these Batistaites have been hiding or have been engaging in counter-revolutionary activities ever since the Bay of Pigs invasion, and even before that, just after the revolution. In other words, they have remained on the ground. Undoubtedly, the overwhelming majority of people during the last year, for instance, who have fled Cuba, have been non-Batistaites, rather peasants class. You say the revolution is supposed to benefit these people. You know, it's very funny about revolutions. Revolutions require work. Revolutions require sacrifice. Revolutions, and our own included, require a certain amount of rationing, a certain amount of calluses, a certain amount of sacrifice, sacrificing one's old personal ideas about country, citizenship, work. And these people who have fled Cuba have not been able to adapt themselves to these new factors which have entered into their lives. These people are the uneducated. These people are the people who did not remain in Cuba to be educated by young people who were afraid of the alphabet, who were afraid of these new things which were occurring, who were afraid that they would lose something by collectivization. They were afraid that they would lose something by seeing their sugar crops taken away, and in place of sugar crops, some other vegetable, some other product planted, because Cuba has always been a one-product country, more or less. These are people who have not been able to adapt.
Mr. Oswald, you say their sugar crops. Most of the Cubans I've talked to that have had anything to do with agriculture in the last year and a half have not owned one single acre of ground. They were cane cutters.
That is
and
correct.
They're the ones that are fleeing the Castro regime.
That is correct, sir. That is very, very true, and I'm very glad you brought that point up. You know, it used to be that these people worked for the United Fruit Company. The American company is engaged in sugar refinery, oil refinery in Cuba. They worked a few months every year during the cane cutting or the sugar cutting, sugar refining season. They never owned anything, and they feel now that that little bit of right, the right to work for 5 months a year, has been taken away from them. They feel that now they have to work all year round to plant new crops, to make a new economy. And so they feel that they have been robbed. They feel that they have been robbed of the right to do as they please, because of the fact that the government now depends upon its people to build its economy, to industrialize itself. So they figure they have been robbed. What they do not realize is that they have been robbed of the right to be exploited, robbed of the right to be cheated, robbed of the right of New Orleanian companies to take away what was rightfully theirs. Of course, they have to share now. Everybody gets an equal portion. This is collectivization. And this is very hard on some people. Some people prefer the dog-eat-dog economy.
What do you refer to as the dog-eat-dog economy? Is that capitalism in your definition?
No, that is an economy where the people do not depend upon each other. They have no feelings of nationality. They have no feelings of culture. They have no feelings of any ties whatsoever on a high level. It is every man for himself. That is what I refer to by dog-eat-dog.
Are you familiar with the existence of a black market in Soviet Russia or in Red China whereas the majority of the populace get their food, their truck crops, their vegetables, and such from this market. Do you know of such a market?
I know about the fact that there is a market in the Soviet Union only for Western apparel, Western apparel and certain other items. There is no black market in the Soviet Union for food, none whatsoever. By black market, I assume that you mean a situation where food is either stolen or grown in one area and then taken to another area and sold covertly, undercover. No such system exists in Russia.
Mr. Oswald, I'm curious about your personal background. If you could tell us something about where you came from, mm-hmm. your education, and your career to date, we'd be interested.
I'd be very happy to. I was born in New Orleans in 1939. For a short length of time during my childhood, I lived in Texas and in New York. During my junior high school days, I attended Beauregard Junior High School. I attended that school for 2 years. Then I went to Warren Eastern High School, and I attended that school for over a year. Then my family and I moved to Texas, where we have many relatives, and I continued my schooling there. Then I entered the United States Marine Corps in 1956. I spent 3 years in the United States Marine Corps, starting out as a private, working my way up through the ranks to the position of buck sergeant. And I served honorably, having been discharged. Then I went back to work in Texas and have recently arrived in New Orleans with my family, with my wife and my child.
What particular event in your life made you decide that the Fair Play for Cuba Committee had the correct answers about the about Cuban-U.S. relations?
Well, of course, Americans in general have only begun to notice Cuba since the Cuban Revolution. That is very true, I think. I became acquainted with it at about the same time as everybody else in 1960, beginning of 1960. I always felt that the Cubans were being pushed into this, to the Soviet bloc by American policy. I still feel that way. Our policy, if it had been handled differently, and many others much more informed than I have said the same thing, if that situation had been handled differently, we would not have the big problem of Castro's Cuba now, the big international political problem. Although I feel that it's a just and a right development in Cuba, still we could be on much friendlier relations with them, and had the government of the United States, its government agencies, particularly certain covert undercover agencies like the now defunct CIA.
And now defunct?
Its leadership is now defunct. Alan Dulles is now defunct. That I believe that without all that meddling, with a little bit different humanitarian handling of the situation, Cuba would not be the problem it is today.
Is there any particular act of the U.S. government do you feel that that pushed Castro into Soviet arms?
Well, as I say, Castro's Cuba, even after the revolution, was still a one-crop economy, having basing its economy on sugar. When we slashed the Cuban sugar quota, of course, we cut their throat. They had to turn to some other country. They had to turn to some other hemisphere in which to sell this one product. They did so, and they have sold it to Russia, and because of that, the price of Russian sugar is now down quite a bit, whereas ours is going up and up and up. And I believe that was the big factor, the cutting of the sugar quota.
Do you think that the U.S. government under President Eisenhower ever wanted to help the Castro regime, ever offered any sort of help to it?
True to our democratic policies, certain people, certain persons in the government, and certain policies adopted very late, but adopted by the government, helped Fidel Castro while he was still in the mountains. That is very true. We cut off aid to Batista just before the revolution, just before it. That was too late. We had already done more harm than we could have ever done before. We were just rats leaving a sinking ship, you see. That was not the thing to do. We have, however, as I say, helped him. We have not now cut off all that help.
There's one point of view which I've heard to the effect that that Castro turned left because he could not get any aid for industrialization in Cuba from the United States. Does the Fair Play for Cuba Committee believe that?
Not entirely, no. We feel that was a factor, certainly. But we feel that the current of the history of the world is now running to that extreme. In other words, countries emerging from colonial domination and so forth are definitely adopting socialistic, leftist, Marxist, and even in some case what will be in the future communist regimes and communist inclinations. You see, this is something which is apparently a world trend.
Does the Fair Play for Cuba Committee believe that this trend should also be copied in the United States?
No, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee is occupied only with the Cuban problem. I do not think that they feel that way, no.
Thank you very much, Mr. Oswald. Tonight we've been talking with Lee Oswald, the Secretary of the New Orleans Chapter of the Pro-Castro Fair Play for Cuban Committee. In subsequent programs, we will present the comments of other leaders concerned with the U.S.-Cuban conflict. Good night.